Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Rommel. We are recording this on a fine Martin Luther King Day. We didn't have a podcast come out this morning, but this will be our Transmissions Tuesday. We are opening up the mailbag. Let's get right into it. Our first question is a trade question. Go figure. Our first question was from M.M., so no first names. And it's basically a trade idea. I don't want to go through the whole thing, but it was basically a trade idea centered around C.J. McCollum for Hassan Whiteside. And the idea was that the Trailblazers would swap the Heat, McCollum for Whiteside. And then the Heat would trade Goran Dragic for a middle first-round pick, and the Heat would take a point guard. And that was basically the idea.
Right.
And it would be McCollum and Mason Plumlee for Whiteside. And that was essentially the idea. But before we do that, I wanted to take that, rather than talk about that hypothetical trade idea, I wanted to talk about this idea of McCollum for Whiteside because it's something that we've talked about on this podcast a lot, is just a straight swap McCollum for Whiteside. It solves everybody's problems. You know, for Portland, it solves the rim protection issues and rebounding issues and defensive issues that they have. For the Heat, it gives them an alpha dog scorer, a 24-year-old guard who you can build around, possibly. But, and we're guilty of just spreading this idea around, I think, it's not going to be as easy as a straight-up swap for those two players as we thought. And I'm going to dive into this. So this is going to be some like nerdy CBA stuff, but bear with me. So C.J. McCollum is on a poison pill contract. What that is he is right now in the last year of his rookie deal. But he signed an extension before the season to extend him for 4 more years in Portland. So his contract this season is $3.2 million, and then that bumps up, his extension is for well over $20 million a year for the 4 years after this year. So that's a poison pill contract. So what happens is that if the Trailblazers were to trade McCollum this season, it would count as $3.2 million going out, and for any team that traded for McCollum, it would count as the average of his next 5 years of the contract, which is $21.9 million. So for the Trailblazers, it would count for $3.2 million going out, and then it would be considered $21.9 million coming in for any team that traded for McCollum. And in the NBA, rules dictate that there's salary matching rules, right? The salaries have to match in order to make a trade.
Right.
So Miami, while Hassan Whiteside's right around that $22 million mark this year, that would usually work, except it doesn't work for Portland because they're taking on a $22 million player and giving away a $3.2 million player. Does this make sense so far, David? Am I explaining this okay?
No, absolutely. Yeah, I think the difference there is a pretty significant one. And so while it works for Miami to take McCollum directly, it wouldn't work for Portland.
Right, and so the difference there is $18 million. So Portland would have to clear $18 million of space. Miami can't take $18 million because McCollum's deal is worth $22 million to them. $21.9, $22 million.
Right.
So they don't have room to add $18 million. So what happens is now we have to find a third team that can absorb $18 million without sending anything back, any salary back, to either Portland or Miami. And so all of a sudden you're like, who can bring in $18 million? There's literally one team in the NBA that could absorb $18 million right now, today, and that's the Denver Nuggets. And now the Denver Nuggets have to have a reason to absorb $18 million. Now, how can they absorb $18 million? Well, Portland can trade them Allen Crabbe, or they could trade them a combination of Evan Turner and Mason Plumlee. Both of those are around $18 million, and that would cover the difference. The problem with that is that Portland, I don't think, would part with Allen Crabbe after they part with CJ McCollum, because now they're getting rid of their... Like, if by getting rid of McCollum, the backfill for that position is Allen Crabbe, who is better defensively than McCollum and makes that maybe Lillard... McCollum backcourt that's not great defensively, you throw Crabbe in there and now it's better defensively. Maybe that solves some of their defensive problems. I don't think they get rid of both of them, so you could scratch Crabbe. I don't think they give up Crabbe and McCollum for Whiteside. I don't think they do it. So now we're talking about Evan Turner, Mason Plumlee. Now you're asking Denver to be... Now the big if there is, are they a believer in Evan Turner? And would they want to take Mason Plumlee, whose contract expires after this year? He's a restricted free agent, so they'd have to pay him if they wanted to keep him, while they also have to go out and pay Gordon Hayward, who's a free agent after this year, and they've got a lot of free agent issues in the next few years. So tying up money in Mason Plumlee, and of course the long-term bad contract that Evan Turner is signed to, doesn't help that case at all. So unless they A, like Evan Turner, and B, look at Evan Turner as maybe insurance in case Gordon Hayward leaves.
Gordon Hayward, no, not in Denver. Is that somebody that Gordon Hayward?
What did I say, Gordon Hayward?
Yeah.
Who Danilo Gallinari? Danilo Gallinari, yeah, other white guy. In case Danilo Gallinari leaves, just like that would be insurance, right?
Right.
So Wilson Chandler, isn't he? His contract expires after the year.
Not this year. No, I don't think he's a free agent. I think he's a free agent next year.
Okay, so basically, there's all of these moving parts, right? All these buts, ifs, and maybes, and then of course, to take those two players, Denver would have to get rid of two players because you can only carry 15 players on a roster in a season. So fortunately, Alonzo G is their 15th player. He's signed to a 10-day contract. So once those 10 days are up, that drops off the roster. Now they have to free up one more roster spot. Well, they can't trade a player to Portland or Miami because of the salary matching reasons. So now if they have to trade a player to a fourth team, and they can't waive a player because then they won't have enough money. They still have to pay a player that you waive. If you trade a player, you don't have to pay him anymore. So now we have to find a fourth team that's involved in a trade. And so that's a whole other can of worms, and I have some ideas, but it's not even worth getting into because now they have to find a fourth player and not take any salary back. So now it has to be a team that can absorb a player contract and not give anything back to Denver because of salary reasons. So all of that is to say, a McCollum for Whiteside straight-up swap would be very, very difficult and is highly unlikely.
No, listen, I mean, it sounds like a convoluted explanation. You might have to rewind and stop there and kind of break down a little bit of, try to absorb everything that you just detailed. But it's important because, as you mentioned, we've been guilty of it. There's a natural tie to Portland in that they were an interested destination for Whiteside during free agency. Like you also mentioned, he fits a lot of their needs as far as what their glaring holes are. They can score, obviously, with Lillard, with McCollum, but their defense has been a weak point for them, and they could certainly use some rip protection that Plumlee does not provide. So he's a great fit there. And then conversely, on Miami's end, they're looking for that alpha dog, for that reliable scorer, and McCollum provides that. So it makes sense on a lot of levels. Unfortunately, it just doesn't make sense from a salary cap and CBA-related perspective. And I'm glad that you broke down the numbers because, like I said, we've been guilty of spreading this, possible destination for Whiteside, and it just does not seem likely to work. Now, I mean, we imagine the tandem of Pat Riley and Andy Ellsberg could probably figure out a way of making this happen. They've historically been involved in some really crazy deals. They were part of the biggest, still I think the biggest trade in NBA history, right? The 4-team trade that brought a whole hell of a lot of players. I think 17 players in total in 4 teams. So it was a pretty huge deal back in 2005. So that would mean they have the creativity on their end. It just, we have to tone it down a notch because we've talked about that as a possible destination for Whiteside if they do wind up moving him. And now, of course, we've heard confirmation from the team that they're not going to move him, but they're still listening to offers as ever, that vague kind of explanation on their end. But we'll see. We'll just have to kind of wait and see what actually does happen around the trade deadline.
I mean, you talked about creativity. Should I just tell you my idea, like just the mock trade that would work? Should I just say it and then we move on?
Everybody loves mock trades. Let's hear it.
All right, so Hassan Whiteside. I'll word it this way. Miami gets CJ McCollum, period, end of story.
Okay.
Portland gets Hassan Whiteside.
Okay.
Denver
so far, so good.
Gets Evan Turner, Mason Plumlee, and Portland's first-round pick. Why do they get the first-round pick? Because basically we're convincing them to please take Evan Turner. So you get a middle first-round pick, ostensibly, is probably what Portland will be. So you get a middle first-round pick, Evan Turner, Mason Plumlee. Evan Turner is an extra ball handler in case any of these free agents leave, whatever. Who's the fourth team, though? So Alonzo G's 10-day contract falls off. That's gone. They trade Jameer Nelson to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are openly in need of and are looking for an additional playmaker / point guard, the backup point guard. I think DeAndre Liggins is their backup point guard right now.
Yeah.
Jameer Nelson is a perfect veteran who fits that roster really nicely. He's a playmaker. He can put the ball on the floor. He can set up other teammates. He's a vet. It works. The Cavaliers in this latest Kyle Korver trade also traded away Mike Dunleavy. That's a $4.8 million trade exception that created. Jameer Nelson's contract is $4.4 million this season, so they could absorb Jameer Nelson without sending anything back, any player back to Denver. They could probably just give them a highly protected second-round pick or something and call it a day. So Miami gets McCollum, Portland gets Whiteside, Denver gets Evan Turner, Mason Plumlee, and Portland's first-round pick. Cleveland gets Jameer Nelson. Four-team deal. Everybody's happy, and it works. So, all right. Also, this whole, all the CBA salary stuff, I'm going to write this up for allyoucanheat.com. So if you want to really dig into it and maybe make up some of your own mock drafts or mock trades and look at the numbers in person as opposed to just listening to them, because I know it's probably hard to keep track of them without the numbers in front of you, allyoucanheat.com. I'll have a write-up in the mailbag tomorrow. All right, next question. Where are my questions? Here they are. It's a two-parter. So part one. If the Heat do end up trading Goran Dragic to the Magic, what would be the best package that the Heat could get for him? And if they don't trade him to the Magic, which team is most likely to make a deal for Dragic? That's the first part. Second part is, if the Heat do trade Dragic and get a pick in the middle of the first round, who do you think they'll target? Or do you think that they're going to look to package the pick in a trade? So this is Chris Leach's question. We appreciate the question, Chris. Let's handle the first part. What does a Dragic to Orlando trade look like? Do you want to take this?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are lots of options. None of them that seem particularly good. I think one of the proposed deal, what you'd expect Miami to get back in return if you're looking to get just players this year, is Ayton, who's been on and off again during the course of the season. He started as their point guard for most of the start of the year. Then he was benched in favor of DJ Augustine, who provides a little bit more flow, I think. But Frank Vogel has been very, very open to changing lineups, looking for anything, kind of desperately, actually, for any kind of combination that will work. And he just hasn't been able to find one. So at this point, Payton is back in the starting lineup. And he's had some good games. Actually, a couple games ago, I think he had his season high in scoring. He's providing a little bit more shooting, I think. He's spacing the floor a little better. It was something he actively worked on in the offseason. And then I think as far as the numbers are concerned, it would probably be Payton and Nikola Vucevic, which Heat fans should be familiar with, because he's not necessarily a high-paid center at this point, but he's making a pretty good amount of money at $12 million per year, more or less. He provides a nice scoring punch for Orlando off the bench. The problem with him has always been his defense, particularly pick and roll. I was watching an earlier matchup tonight against the Denver Nuggets, and he just can't guard the pick and roll. He winds up either rolling towards the ball handler and forgetting about the roll man, and then he leaves a wide open shot. And for a team like Denver that scores as much as they do and passes as frequently as they do, he was just getting exploited pretty regularly, and Denver was blowing them out for most of the game. So.
Yeah, and it's a position. Vucevic plays a position of strength for Miami. He plays center, and maybe you can play him at power forward, but I don't love going big like that.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah, I don't like that.
That's terrible.
And Elfrid Payton, I liked him coming out of college a lot. I liked him as a draft prospect, but I think he has a ceiling, in this modern game. He's not a great shooter. The Heat have enough guys that aren't great shooters that you're hoping can develop. It's a downgrade from Goran Dragic. I don't like the you're right. The contracts work, and on its face, like, it looks right. Like, Vucevic and Payton for Dragic seems fair in a vacuum, given the personnel. But how many minutes are you going to play Vucevic? 22 minutes a game? Like, right. You're playing, like, the six-man Enes Kanter role? I don't know about that. And he's not nearly the post player that Enes Kanter is either. But, and then Elfrid Payton is just a massive downgrade. He's shown no ability to lead on offense. I don't like him necessarily for the Heat.
No, he's not a good fit there.
And then you're risking, and then you're trading Dragic into the division. So now you have these dragon revenge games four times out of the year that you're dealing with. That's not good. So
now there is another option though.
Okay.
And I don't know if you were getting to that, but a nice piece from Matt Moore came out of this a couple days ago, and he explained it, and I had not even considered this. If Miami's looking for just an incredible overhaul, and that's why the trade takes place, they move him to Orlando. They move Dragic to Orlando for maybe a draft pick, but also Jeff Green's expiring contract. He signed an incredible deal for $15 million at the start of this year. It was one that Orlando's been blasted for because Jeff Green has been notoriously inconsistent throughout his career, but he's getting paid this extraordinary amount of money. And if he fits what Orlando's trying to do as far as their push for the playoffs, but, you know, that doesn't seem realistic at this point. Green's numbers have been wonky. And so it's just not necessarily a good fit. But his deal does come off at the end of the season. So theoretically, Miami could move Dragic, get a first-round pick in exchange, probably something in the top 15, knowing how Orlando's season is going. And then Jeff Green's money comes off the books as well. And all of a sudden you have this big amount of salary cap space to potentially sign free agents with this summer.
I actually really like this idea. I don't mind taking Jeff Green for a year. What's the difference? This year is
not even a year. It's the next 3 months, basically.
Right. Yeah, for the rest of the remainder of the season. So you take Jeff Green on for half a year, and it would have to be what Miami is looking for. Like, they would have to get substantial draft picks, in return. Orlando has no draft picks outgoing. Any of their picks are tradable.
Right.
So you could get their pick this year, and then a future pick. They actually they will potentially get the Lakers pick in 2019. Now, who knows how good of a pick that'll be by the time the baby Lakers grow up a little bit more.
Right.
But they have multiple picks to work with, so maybe they trade and a bunch of second rounders, so maybe Miami could start, collecting some of those assets that they've traded away, getting some of those second round picks that they've traded away. I actually don't mind that deal. At all. If the Heat say we can get two first round picks and maybe a second or a couple of second round picks in return for Dragic and take Jeff Green off their hands, I love that deal.
It's just hard to stomach because, it's not just a significant downgrade. Dragic hasn't done anything wrong here other than just be a victim of wrong place, wrong time, basically. Had this team been able to keep their veteran core of Wade and Bosch, Dragic would be a perfect fit and a perfect compliment, I think, as well. But it's just been a bad time for him. So, I would hate to see him go just from an aesthetic perspective of seeing how this team plays so badly just in those moments when he's off the floor or not having a particularly good game. It would be a struggle to watch this team.
And to see him go to Orlando, number one, a division rival, and number two,
sure,
another shitty team that he won't be able to win with. Like, I want Dragic to be happy. I really do.
Right. And on top of that, there's, as Matt Moore talked about when he first came on our show before the start of season, salary cap space doesn't mean jack if you can't actually agree to get somebody to sign. And if you're looking to – if you trade Dragic away and you've got your linchpin in Whiteside, theoretically, is that enough to attract free agents? And I know from a fan's perspective, it's always difficult to hear this, but, you might have – $60 million of salary cap space if you trade Dragic and lose Green's contract off the books. But that doesn't necessarily help if nobody wants to sign here. So, are you going to overpay for somebody like Portland this past season? Or are you just going to have all this salary cap space and continue a rebuild and now without your best offensive player in Dragic? I mean, who knows?
No, it's worth it. And you know what? We're starting to step on one of our other mailbag questions here a little bit. So I want to table that discussion for a few minutes, but we want to get on to part two of Chris Leach's question. But before we do that, just a quick break, just to give a shout out to the Locked On Podcast Network. It's a fantastic network of podcasts, daily podcasts for every NFL and every NBA team. Of course, you're listening to Locked On Heat right now. We cover the Miami Heat on a daily basis. And if you're not subscribed, go to iTunes or wherever, however you listen to podcasts, subscribe to Locked On Heat so you can get our show automatically every day. And while you're at it, go check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. Our boss, David Locke, hosts Locked On NBA. He's got great guests on there, averaging a show a week. And every time he has a guest on, it's always a must-listen. Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Now that you're probably getting into like the real hardcore mix of your fantasy basketball league, Jason Lloyd, our guy, hosts a fantastic fantasy basketball show, and I would recommend going to subscribe to that. So, quick shout out for Locked On Podcast Network. Check it out. A lot of great content over there.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
So.
No, it was also one, the first part of the question had 1A and 1B. Basically, 1A was what we were just talking about, the best package that he could get back.
It's really a veiled four-part question by Chris here.
Yeah,
like, don't think you can put one over on us, even though you totally did.
So the second part of part one is, if they don't trade to the Magic, who's most likely to make a deal for Goran?
I look at the Nuggets, just for the need and the salary space that they have. They seem like an idea or a likely, maybe possible place. Okay, the Sacramento Kings, they need a point guard badly. The Chicago Bulls.
Yep.
The New York Knicks, especially because you don't know if Derrick Rose will be there on a day-to-day basis. And of course the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, I mean, those are all potential teams. A couple of those vying for playoff spots. How about the Wizards? I mean, theoretically, they don't need a starting point guard, but maybe have Dragic as a very quality backup.
That's a lot of money to invest. I mean, I don't think they can get away with it because they've got to give Wall an extension in the next couple of years, right?
Good point.
I actually like the Knicks for Dragic. We remember when he was getting when he forced his way out of Phoenix, New York was on his short list.
Right. I think it was just New York and Miami, wasn't it?
There might have been a third team, but I think it was New York and Miami, really. And the Lakers.
Oh, the Lakers. Lakers, yes, yeah. Right.
Just because of L.A. Goran Dragic, secretly more stylish than he gets credit for. Just going to say that. Would fit in L.A. Anyway, New York seems like a good destination because Derrick Rose, that experiment has failed. Brandon Jennings was fine as a bench player, but he's not good enough to be a starter. He's not consistent enough. Dragic fits a lot of what they'd like to do there. He can play off ball. He can, you know, he can obviously lead an offense. He'd fix a lot of their problems. I like the trio of Dragic, Carmelo Anthony, and Kristaps Porzingis. I think that works. But with all of these trade rumblings and possibilities around Carmelo Anthony lately, like, would we rule out a swap Dragic for Carmelo Anthony and maybe some other parts obviously involved in there? But I don't know. I don't want to go too deep into this because we've listed a bunch of teams. I don't want to try to figure out a hypothetical that works. But just something to talk about, right? Like, it. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, and if I can interject something else completely unrelated to Chris's question. I mean, we've talked about before, you know, Dragic's lack of respect from the referees and things of this sort. But there seems to be, and I didn't know this, a large swath of NBA fans that don't like him?
Dragic?
Yeah.
What?
That think he is a quote-unquote punk?
Why?
People hate not know. I that was an interesting question. It was actually the first time I'd ever heard that, and it was on an NBA-related chat from a bunch of different writers, and I asked, why do you think he's a punk? And basically, I got the reasons that he makes a lot of contact. He gets away with a lot of chippy stuff, which seems weird, but it's possible. And also the very vague one that his face just seems like it's perpetually sad or angry.
I disagree. So I disagree on all fronts.
Those are pretty weak. And then I saw something else regarding the Jordan Clarkson thing. I think it was, I can't remember now what national writer was talking about the Jordan Clarkson incident. Yeah. And justified Clarkson's, oh, it was Shea Serrano on a recent piece that he wrote for The Ringer about whether or not players get their money's worth for fines and getting in trouble if they get ejected or things of that sort. And Jordan Clarkson did not get his money's worth, according to Shea Serrano. But apparently, Dragic was the one who initiated contact originally because he was coming off of a screen or setting a screen, and he kind of forced his way into Clarkson's chest, then kind of hip-checked him a little bit as he was rolling to the hoop. And then that's when Clarkson kind of shoved him down after having just a little bit too much of Dragic's.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's stupid.
That's just stupid. All right. Part two of Chris's four-part question. If the Heat do trade Dragic and get a middle of the first round pick in return, who do you think they target, or do you think that the pick will be included in yet another trade? Let's wrap this whole thing up because we've spent a lot of time on this question. They take the best player available in the middle of the first round. I think this Heat roster is not good enough to draft for need. Take the best player available. If Dragic does get traded, right? If we're in a world that Dragic is traded and Miami is collecting draft picks in return for Dragic and not players, then we have entered a world in which the Heat are in an asset collecting phase. So you just take the best player available. That's it. And then that pick is included in one way or another in a trade in the future. But I think they would just take the best player available.
Okay, so you don't think that he would include that pick for like another package and acquire like a superstar player or something like that?
Well, that would be like a two-parter, right? It would say, all right, we'll trade Dragic. I mean, maybe if it's part of a larger deal, but I think at this point...
Well, that was his question. It was,
yeah. Maybe, that could happen. That could happen. But if the Heat... I don't see...
But your rationale is that if they wind up with that pick, they've moved on from Dragic, they're just about getting as many players as possible and seeing which one of them might turn into a potential superstar rather than packaging a set of players, say, Winslow in that mid-teens first pick for, say, X superstar.
If there is a team out there that is willing to trade a superstar or a star or whatever for a mid-first-round pick and an assortment of other players, Winslow, Richardson, Tyler Johnson, whatever it might be,
right,
then that makes sense to me, but I don't know. Maybe it's part of a three-team deal, but I don't think that they would trade Dragic. What I'm trying to say is they would not make a series of moves in which they trade Dragic. They say, "All right, we're gonna tank. We are going to trade Dragic and start collecting assets, and then all of a sudden turn that asset around for that middle of the first round pick around for a player."
Mm-hmm.
If they do end up. Like kind of sideways making a trade where Dragic turns into a first round pick, which goes to another team. Part of some weird three team trade for a megastar is how that would happen. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Anyway. All right, let's go on to the next question. When Josh Richardson or Josh McRoberts return, does it make more sense to cut ties with either Derek Williams or another player instead of O'Carroll White? The Heat could cut any player that they wish. This question from Big Pat.
perhaps a little background is in need because I don't think we've talked about it. The league awarded Miami a medical exception roster spot, basically,
yeah,
an allowance.
Exception.
Right, so that they could sign an additional player above whomever they currently have in their roster because they've had a certain number of players miss a certain number of time due to injury, including Chris Bosh, Justice Winslow, now Josh Richardson, Josh McRoberts being among them. So, I mean, basically everybody has missed time at one point or another, with the exception, I think, of Dragic, Whiteside had his eye injury, yeah. But they had enough injury where they said, hey, come on, let's sign somebody else.
They had four players miss that will be out for 2 weeks. Two weeks, and those four players have missed the last three games. So,
okay. That's the requirement from the league office.
Exactly. So once they hit that requirement, they apply for the exception. The league says, "Yeah, you're going through some hard times, buddy. Here's an extra roster spot for a while." and then that roster spot is temporary. It's essentially a 16th roster spot, and it's temporary until one of those four players returns. Now, those four players are Justice Winslow, Chris Bosh, Josh McRoberts, and Josh Richardson. Chris Bosh and Justice Winslow are not returning. They're out for the season. So it's going to be Richardson or McRoberts. Once one of them return, then the Heat, then that 16th roster spot is gone. And Big Pat, you're right that they could get rid of any of the players that they have on their roster, but I'll tell you why it won't be okay, that O'Kara White is the only player that they're going to get rid of.
Okay.
Because as much as maybe, let's say O'Kara White walks in and he outplays Derek Williams and Luke Babbitt and these guys who have not played well this year. Well, Derek Williams is still under contract for $4.9 million this season. That's fully guaranteed. I don't see Mickey Arison looking at this roster and the season the way it is and saying, yeah, let's pay $5 million to a guy to not play here so that we can make sure that we get this D-League forward on this roster.
That's, now, Babbitt's not making a whole heck of a lot of money, though.
It's still over $1 million. I don't think that they do that either. Like his contract is guaranteed, too, for the rest of the year, and it's like, I don't know. Does Mickey Arison look at this team and he's like, yeah, I'll throw away $1 million to make sure we have a D-League forward on this team? Like, I don't see it. But especially given that after March 1st, the Heat can wait, or really in the middle of February, but they won't do it until after March 1st because Chris Bosh, if they waive him then, cannot play for a playoff team.
Sure.
So after March 1st, when they were reportedly expected to waive Chris Bosh, that opens up a roster spot. So O'Kara White could just be auditioning now for that spot that opens up later at the same position, a position that could still be a position of need for Miami in March.
I think you're forgetting the biggest reason why they don't want O'Kara White on the team, and that's that he'll probably bring a lot more energy and hustle to the team than they currently have, and the tank is on. So I don't think they want a guy like that who's going to bring a sense of energy and purpose for an otherwise lost season.
And I just also want to point out here, I know there's guys, Derek Williams is a point of frustration. Luke Babbitt is a point of frustration. Deion Waiters is a point of frustration. They're all scapegoats in a way. No, he's not, of course not. But for some fans, misinformed fans, Deion Waiters is.
There you go.
So just my whole thing is this roster sucks. This team sucks. Get rid of if you just took Deion Waiters, Derek Williams, and Luke Babbitt off this roster today, they still suck. So just don't worry about it so much, guys. Like, just watch the team. They suck. Watch the team. Or don't. I don't care. But, like, it's really, it's not worth your time to get that frustrated over Derek Williams and Luke Babbitt. Like, these are guys that they signed to one-year contracts so that they can maintain flexibility. Would you rather have them gotten a slightly better player? Would you rather have them signed Evan Turner to a four-year, $18 million a year season?
No. But I think that's an extreme situation, though. I think the other perspective a fan might have is, well, fine. If Mickey Arison is a bazillionaire, as he most certainly is, and he won't care about spending that kind of money, why not cut guys like Babbitt and Williams and somebody else and have a guy like O'Kara White who has the potential to blossom into a player, Briante Weber, who's been tantalizing and arguably the best player in the D-League. Why not bring him aboard and give him some playing time, things of that sort? If you brought him in last season at the tail end, and that might arguably have been a mistake when you didn't really need a point guard and you could have used a more skilled big, and you brought him in at the end of last season, why not bring him in midway through this season and see if maybe he has the potential to be a significant player? He's already under contract, so why not?
Yeah, and I think what you're doing is playing devil's advocate right now, right?
Maybe.
But, they got both of those guys on their D-League team, and Briante Weber can't even make the 76ers. He got beat out by another D-League player, so
that's interesting.
It's like, they have all the players at the D-League, and they're developing them there. And you and I have evaluated Briante Weber quite a bit, and you and I both came to the same conclusion that he needs time in the D-League would serve him better than sitting at the end of the bench for the Heat, or even playing in an NBA game for the Heat. Like, he's not ready for the NBA. So we like him playing in the D-League. If he gets away, so be it. But as far as developing him, D-League's the place for him to be. And as far as O'Kara White goes, like, who cares? Like, nothing against O'Kara White, but who cares? Like, this guy is not going to be a player in the league. Like, let's just move on.
Don't count him out, Wes. You never know.
That's true. I don't know anything. All right, last question. And I'm going to read this whole thing because it's so nice. And we're going to just toot our own horn a little bit. So this is our question from Robert Smith. First up, First, I have to say I'm a new listener to your podcast. I must say, I'm a fan. You two do an outstanding job. Look, I swear we did not write this.
Mom, is that you?
Robert Smith, it's a generic name. I don't know. I could be making it up. To my question, I know you, Wes, and maybe David, are big fans of Markelle Fultz and, to a lesser extent, Lonzo Ball. Both have been ranked as either the number one or number two players in this upcoming draft. Both are point guards. So, the question is, do you think it would be wise for the Heat to trade Dragic, since they'll probably draft a point guard, or would it make more sense to keep Dragic and kind of have him mentor the incoming rookie? I'll also add Dennis Smith Jr., the NC State point guard, to this whole mix, just because he's been widely put as a top five point guard. So basically, of the top five players in college basketball, three of them are point guards, and Miami is poised to have a top five pick. So just odds are they're going to draft a point guard, just because of who's available. So
I think it's something we've also talked about before, the value of moving Dragic. And I think when we first started discussing it, it was, you know, we still thought that there might be potential for this team, and we just started hearing the rumblings about a potential trade. But I think we're both of the mind, the set that Dragic on this team provides some value in despite his limited, or despite the fact that his schedule is different than, you know, Miami's current roster.
Right.
You know, he's a little bit older, et cetera. I think it's still valuable to have him on the team because of the role he provides, because I think he can teach. I don't know that it's necessarily better to put all these young players on the court at the same time, knowing that they may not succeed right away. Like, I don't think that's a recipe for success. You have to have a balance.
It'll be chaos. And Dragic, when he's running the point, he gives them lanes to stay in. It's like, I'm the point guard. Josh Richardson, you learn to play better off the ball. Tyler Johnson, you could be a secondary ball handler. I'll let you play off the ball. Justice Winslow, you could be a secondary ball handler and play small forward. Like, you don't have to be the lead point guard. Like, he gives guys roles to play. When Dragic is not there, everybody is playing every role all of a sudden. There's no control, there's no focus, and it's hard to develop everything when you really haven't developed anything.
Well, we saw that with Winslow, right? I mean, all of a sudden, kind of burdened by this heavier role to play, and that was with Dragic out on the floor. So imagine with Dragic gone, all of a sudden he's the most experienced ball handler on the team. That's not necessarily
going to
work.
How's he going to improve his 3-point shot when he's got to lead the offense?
Right.
The other thing we have to keep in mind here is all this Dragic talk is under the caveat that Miami needs to trade him to tank. Well, the Heat are really bad with Goran Dragic. They don't need to trade Goran Dragic to tank. And this is why I think that Pat Riley, just a quick aside, has done an amazing job as far as, like, keeping this facade that the Heat are not a tanking organization. We don't tank. Right. We're competitive. We have more integrity than to tank. Well, we're not going to trade away all our best players. Well, they don't have to, and they still suck. So they don't have to tank in this way. So now, knowing that they don't have to get rid of Dragic in order to be really bad, they're in the driver's seat. This is like the best of both worlds for them. Like, if somebody calls them with this offer that they just can't refuse, then it makes sense to trade Dragic. But there's no reason to just ship him off for pennies on the dollar at this point. You don't have to. There's no incentive there. And just like what you were saying, having him on the roster helps the development of young guys in the first place. So I think it'll take... there has been a report out recently that I think it was Mark Stein of ESPN reported that right now Miami's price tag for Dragic is too high to facilitate a trade. Well, that's good. We don't want the Heat to sell low on Dragic. We want them to demand a lot. And you look at the market of point guards right now. What quality point guards are available? If we start looking around the league, I mean, there was some talk about John Wall. That's not going to happen. They're not going to move on from him in the middle of the year. Not while in the race for the eighth seed in the East. Like, Dragic is by far the best and the only quality point guard that is available. And there's a few teams that we talked about earlier: Orlando, Chicago, New York, Sacramento. These teams that are in that really want to make the playoffs this year. Right now, it's a seller's market for the Heat, so they should demand a high price tag for Dragic. So, with all that said, I like the idea of having Dragic here. X's and O's wise, if they do draft Fultz or Ball, both Fultz or Ball can play off the ball, as can Goran Dragic. So it's not redundant, necessarily, if they're both on the roster. And at some point when you're ready to hand the keys over to whoever you pick, then you can trade Dragic. And that's fine, right? Like, once you find the deal that you want, you trade him.
Yeah, I'm the mindset that even if they draft a guy like this and trade Dragic, let's say they draft a potential future superstar at point guard, they should still acquire relatively on the cheap a quality point guard who could probably start over them.
Like Beno Udrih.
Yeah, maybe not Udrih. I mean, that's a potential option. But
Mario Chalmers, shout out. Mario Chalmers?
Sure. Okay. That's not bad. That's actually not a bad idea at all. To bring Chalmers back here, have him start knowing that his time is probably limited. He's familiar with Spoelstra, the system, the players, et cetera, the arena, the coaching staff, I mean, everything. So he could come in here, mentor. Look, he's been there. He's played big games at the highest level. I don't see why not.
All right, perfect. All right, well, all really great questions. Love the questions this week. We actually did two mailbags last week because we got so many questions. And we still have plenty of questions for today's mailbag. And if we get more questions, we'll just keep doing mailbags. I like the mailbags.
Keep it up. Thank you so much.
Well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, however you listen to podcasts, we appreciate it. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us these mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you're not subscribed already, please do so. That way you get the podcast automatically every day. Football season's over for Miami fans. The Dolphins are out of the playoffs, unfortunately. So now it's prime basketball season. Subscribe to Locked On Heat. Get in the mix. Understand what's going on. Become an expert on the Heat so that you're smarter than all your friends. That's what we do for you. All right. That's all we got. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Hey again, Wes here. So one of the reasons our boss, David Locke, started the Locked On Podcast Network is because podcasts are hot. I mean, of course they are. You're listening to one right now. And if your company is looking to reach listeners as awesome as you are, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Heat is listened to by 95% men, 74% of which are between the ages of 18 and 44. According to a recent study, podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than within any other media outlet. Plus, our rates are reasonable, or you can decide that for yourself. Just email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat and engaging the audience you want to reach.